episode 49, take 2, and marker.
Hey guys, this is episode 49 of On Taking Pictures. Sorry we missed you yesterday. We had some technical difficulties.
So you had to stand by.
Yeah. Our technicians were aware of the issue and worked swiftly toward a resolution. This is the show about photography. We're talking about the art, the science, sometimes even the philosophy of making images. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from FadedAndBlurred.com. With me, audio engineer and fancy photographer, Bill Wadman.
You know, the thing is, I actually have a degree in this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. That's what kills me. Let's take a few minutes. We did actually do the show yesterday as scheduled, as planned.
Yep.
But had a weird issue that neither one of us nor anybody that we know has ever experienced. Bill?
Yeah. So I record with Adobe Audition, okay, which records WAV files. And then there's like a session in Audition. So it's recording the WAV file. And then when you hit stop, it's just a WAV file on your hard drive. And then there's the session that's referencing these WAV files. So everything worked fine. I hit stop. I hit save. Everything's fine. And I start cutting up the show as I do, just to do the top and tail and all the rest of it. And then you render it to another file to then export that file as an MP3. It's a stupid roundabout way of doing it, but that's how it works. And so I render the file. And as at the 99% point of rendering the file, it gives me this nasty disk error, which I've never seen before. It says it couldn't write to the disk, even though the disk is otherwise fine, as far as I can tell. And said I have to restart Audition.
Now, in theory, up to that 99% point, it's reading, writing.
Yeah. And not only that, but that should have nothing to do with the source files it was working from, you know?
Right.
Okay, you couldn't save the mix down. Okay. Great. So I'll just go back and do it again.
Right.
So I shut down Audition like it forces me to do, and I start Audition up again. And when I load the show, the clips are all in the timeline, but they're all blank with big question marks on them. Like the WAV files that those clips are referencing don't exist.
Right. As if to say your files are gone.
Yeah. So I go to the folder where it puts these things, and every other pair of WAV files from every other show we've done in the last 6 months are there. But the last one was done, the last two were from last week.
Yeah.
They're gone. I tried looking in the temp folders that it makes over on the SSD. I tried using recovery software. They don't exist. These things, it's almost as if they never existed. Even though when I was editing and cutting them up, they were all there and I was listening and playing back. It was the craziest thing. One other guy in the Adobe forums had a very similar thing happen to him, and everyone thinks he's crazy, but now I know that the guy's not crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, no fragmented files, no TMP files,
nothing.
no random headers,
nope.
Just gone.
Gone.
Yeah, so very strange. Sorry for the delay.
But we're back, and this is going to be even better.
It is going to be even better.
Yeah. I'm going to have to try to make you cry again, so we're going to have to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, hey, moving on.
Last week, we were talking about copyright, and you had a little copyright.
Wrong.
Yeah, copy. you had a little victory. So a plus one for standing up for yourself and doing the right thing. You want to talk about it?
I did have a victory. So last week I talked about how this magazine used my picture of Gina Trapani on their website for 40 hottest women in tech.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is just really funny because a bunch of the other women are just like, I'm a smart woman. It has nothing to do with...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, they were
actually
pissed.
Yeah, it actually offended a lot of the women on the list.
Yeah, which is... They're like, hey, could you take me off the list while you're at it?
Yeah.
So anyway, good job, guys. They used my picture. And so I was pissed, and I recounted this all last week if you missed it. And so I sent them an email saying, you're using my picture illegally. Here's an invoice for a few hundred bucks, so you're going to pay it. And I sent it to the editor that I got from the writer. He said, oh, this is my editor. Go talk to him. I didn't do anything. The editor didn't write me back. But the next day, the head of, I don't know what he was, the head of image acquisition or whatever it is,
right,
wrote me back.
Media relations, yeah, or something.
And apologized profusely, said that it must have been some sort of mix-up, that they got it off the Gina's Flickr page because she had had it up there, and they didn't realize that it wasn't, you know, Creative Commons. And then so Heather and I go look up because Conrad's like, oh, you know, she goes and finds it on the page, and it clearly says photographed by Bill Wadman, all rights reserved, copyright, you know.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, no, that's not a good excuse.
Is he had said that oh, the, you know, this is written by a writer and then the editors must have missed it, implying that there are several sets of eyes along the way before this thing went online.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of them somehow missed this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're a magazine. They know better. So he said, you know, what if we put your name on it, or could we take it down? You know, is there any other recourse other than paying you? And I said, no, there's not. Because as you pointed out, Jeffrey, the majority of the people who were going to see that saw it in those 4 days that it's been up.
Sure.
So you've gotten it. You've used it already. Sorry. You got to pay me. And I wasn't asking for thousands of dollars. It's an online usage of some portrait on, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was asking for probably three or four times what they would have paid me had they actually contacted me and said, oh, we have a budget of, you know, $16.50, you know?
Right.
And so I'd send this invoice and I said, I wrote him back. I was like, no, I was like, you've already used it. The people have already seen it. And, honestly, like, I'm a professional. I get paid for my work. So you're going to pay the invoice. And the guy said, okay. He's like, I need a W-9. So I sent him a W-9 and I got a check on Monday.
Yeah. So, I mean, to their credit, they handled it really well. Yeah.
Well, the handling really, really well would have been for them to write me back the first time and say, yeah, where's the address that we could send the money?
Agreed. Sure.
But it's a little bit of a pain in the neck. But yeah, I won. Power up. I feel good about it in that I stood up for myself and I came out victorious, as it were. But you know, all of us have to stand up for the rights of our work, you know?
Well, and that's the bigger picture, is that you made the insistence that your work has value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people maybe wouldn't have reached out to the magazine, or wouldn't have, you know, nothing's going to come of it. They're a big magazine. I'm just a freelance photographer. I'm a new photographer. I'm an established, whatever area of your career you're at, whatever career arc you're at. The tendency is to think that the big conglomerate is just going to stomp all over you.
And they, you know what? And if they had a toehold of legal standing, they would have.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, and they didn't. And there was no, you know, we have the right to do. There was none of that. No blustery back at me trying to scare me away. It was all sure. Like, oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Wadman. Can I kiss your toes?
Right.
Because they know they're in the wrong, and they know that I could have, you know, made a much bigger stink about it than I did. So it's cheaper for them just to pay me. You know, it's like there's that line between, you know, what is it worth to me that they'll feel a little pain, you know, in that, like, oh man, that guy's going to get in trouble from his boss for having spent a few hundred dollars more than they were supposed to spend because they screwed up and had to pay me. And the line on the other side, which is that it'll be enough of a pain to them that they might actually fight back, you know?
Well, but
I don't want to have to make it a legal thing with them, because then I got to get a lawyer and whatever, but I would like them to feel pain. So it's sort of like, you know, if it's under, say, $1,000, it's cheaper for them just to pay me rather than make a stink out of it, you know?
But what looks like to be the case, because somebody else had posted that they used Lisa Bettany's photo without her permission as well. So it looks like, and I don't know, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but it looks like this type of practice is business as usual, you know, and we'll go ahead and use these things, and we're going to bank on the odds of not getting called out by the photographer in question. You know what I mean?
No, and I'm sure that it is. I mean, look, if they do this to five photographers and only one of them notices, you know, and they get away with it, quote unquote, for the other four. And so they got to give the guy who notices three or four times what they would have paid him anyway. They're still ahead.
Right.
And that is the reason, like last week you were asking about why I would charge more than I would have charged initially. It's because they have to know that they can't do this.
Sure.
Because otherwise they'll just wait for me to notice and then pay me my $50, you know?
Right.
So, you know, you have to stick it to them at least a little bit. The crazy thing that the thing that kills me is that had I actually done work for them, had they contacted me or had I shot Gina for them for the shoot, it would have taken 6 to 8 weeks for me to get a check.
Sure. Yeah. You know? Whatever. If they're on a net 60 or net, you know, net 30 or whatever.
And it's just, it's crazy to me. That it just goes to show you all these people like, oh, well, we can't pay you. You know, it takes X, Y to go to our accounting department. I had a check in my hand 3 days later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means they sent it out that day.
Yeah. They had to write the check when they got the email.
Yeah. So it just goes to show you that like all of that accounting crap is a bunch of bull. And, you know, sometimes you want to pull that like somebody says, oh, you know, yeah, I could do this, but I need to get paid, you know, on delivery. Oh, well, we can't do that. All right. Well, we're not doing that. Oh, okay. Well, we'll have somebody specially cut you a check. It's like, see, you can.
Yeah. These mechanisms are in place if need.
Of course they are, because sometimes they need to do things fast, you know?
So, but the bigger picture is, guys and girls, stand up for your work. Your work has value. You put your time, your effort, your creativity into it. It has value.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
doing what you do is hard enough, you know?
Yeah. Right. Right.
without not getting paid for it, without not being compensated some way.
You know, and one of the things that the problem that I've had for years and people have talked about it before on this show, people being you and me and the people who write in.
what people?
You know, the other people on the show have discussed this before.
The people in my head have talked about it.
Is that, you know, the whole labeling yourself an artist, labeling yourself a photographer, like who am I to say that I'm an artist or a photographer or whatever it is? You know, yeah, I take pictures, but I'm not really a photographer. And I think a lot of that has to do with I mean, there's a self-image thing, of course, right? Mm-hmm. There's some people, you know, those people who seem to have no scruples about that kind of stuff. Like they pick up a bass guitar and they're like, oh, I'm a bassist. And it's you don't even know how to play. What do you? You can't call yourself a bassist yet, you know.
Well, look. I mean, look. There are photographers. I mean, it's we've talked about it. That you've got the gear, you've got the lenses.
We know some
you've got
of them.
Yeah, and it's like no, you're not a photographer. You're a guy who has a bunch of gear.
Right. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing for me. You know, standing up and sending that email. I had a hard time sending that email. I know people who, I mean, this is almost like a therapy session thing, but I have a hard time standing up and saying, no, I'm worth it. My pictures are good. You're going to have to pay me. Like I have a hard time not going, oh, well that picture wasn't even that good anyway. So I don't
right.
even.
Or it only took me a few minutes to take that. So
exactly.
As if that somehow makes it, okay.
Right. Of course it doesn't. But that's the fear, you know what I mean?
I wonder if that is a result of this sort of the overarching societal belief that we don't have real jobs, quote unquote.
Well, we don't.
Yeah, well. But
no,
you know what
we
I mean?
Do. No, of course we have real jobs.
But it's nebulous. Like you shouldn't, you're not supposed to express yourself and be happy at your job. You're supposed to just work. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah. And absolutely. That's a big discussion, right? But I think some of this has to do with the whole concept of having dreams, right? Having aspiring to do something different.
Sure.
And just taking that leap, you know, having a regular job where you get a paycheck or coming out of school and saying, you know what, I'm not going to go get a job at that accounting firm or what have you. That's a hard step to take. You know, there's an attorney I know who is a photographer on the side, and you know, when you say to him, oh, what do you do? And he says, well, for my day job, or what do I do? And he's an attorney, you know, he's a partner, right, he's right. a very powerful man, but like he sees himself as a photographer, but he's not willing or able or whatever, for whatever reason, he doesn't take that leap of just quitting his job at the law firm, right? That's a hard step to take.
Right.
And sure I'm not blaming him or anything. I mean, look, you know, the guy's doing his thing. That's great. But
it's interesting though, that he is able to sort of delineate, you know, what do you mean? You have to qualify that question. What do I do?
Yeah.
Like what do I do to put food on the table,
or what do I want to do?
What speaks to my soul? What speaks what feeds my passion?
And ultimately I would love, you know, for my own thing, those things have to be the same thing, or at least that has to be the goal for me, right? That's my dream.
But I'm going to throw a wrench in here.
Curveball.
It wasn't the case. It wasn't always the case. I mean, you and I have similar backgrounds in that we both were in jobs where we were making six-figure incomes.
Yes.
And left them for very different reasons.
I didn't hate what I did before, in the sense that I didn't groan doing work every day.
No. No. But what was the final, I need to be doing something else for you? What was that?
It was my father's death. It was the idea that what I would have to show for my work at the end of my life.
Okay. So that was that the final straw, or was that more of an epiphany? Was that the end result?
That was an epiphany.
Okay.
And it was also, I could have easily gone along, kept doing what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a realization that I wanted more control.
Sure.
You know, when you're doing, I used to do art direction for advertising and that kind of stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of work in Flash and all that kind of stuff. And there was I came to the conclusion that it frustrated me that I didn't get a lot of respect for what I did. You know, I was, you're an art director, you're a designer, you're whatever. Okay. Yeah. Like, much the same way as it is in photography, but you know, can you do it for this budget or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Right. Like we're completely interchangeable, even though you or I or Craig or whoever else would do a completely different job on whatever it is we're doing. We're seen as just as interchangeable as a car mechanic, and not saying that mechanics aren't artists as well.
But there's this nebulous sort of what you do, you know, cloud surrounding what you do. It's you know, well, can't you just create this?
Yeah.
Can't you just, you know, it's like I don't have a create website button on my keyboard.
Yeah.
As much as you might think that there is one, it actually is a lot of time.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And so there's this weird sort of perception surrounding what it is that you do when you say I'm this. Even when you say I'm a photographer, there's still this. Well, people need qualification.
Right.
What kind of photographer?
Yeah.
Are you a wedding photographer? Are you a sports photographer?
All the time when somebody asks and they say, oh, what do you do? I'm a photographer. You make like full time. You make your living at that.
Yeah.
I get that. Probably half or two thirds of the time that I get asked that question, you know? Are you a wedding photographer? You know, you take senior pictures. I'm like, no, I take pictures for magazines. Really? You can make a living for that?
Yeah. Like what?
But you know, so for me, I enjoyed what I was doing, but I felt like, I was just part of a team, and for my own, not ego really. It was, you know, when I was a kid, my father I felt put down all the time. Nothing was ever good enough, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was for my piano practice or you know, getting the right wrench when my father was working on something and sent me downstairs or whatever it was, right?
Sure.
It was never like, wow, really good job.
Yeah.
There was always a qualification. There was always a question mark at the end of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, very similar upbringings.
And so as I got older, I crave control, because mm-hmm. if something works out, I want to be able to get all of the praise.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Like, oh, this picture's beautiful, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, you didn't do the retouching on it. Well, oh, that retouching is really beautiful. And then it's like, oh, well, then it's not my picture. It's the retoucher's picture, you know,
right.
whatever it is.
Right, right.
So for me, I like to work soup to nuts. I'm going to light it. I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to retouch it. And here's the finished image done, printed
right.
as is.
Right, right.
And therefore, if people say it's a great image, I get all of that glow, as it
sure.
were. Right. So when it came to the web stuff, there was so much, you know, client import and back and forth and other people and, oh, the coder yeah. didn't code it right or, you know.
It's designed by committee.
Exactly. And there was something about that that was just so unsatisfying for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, okay, yeah, I'm throwing all of this energy into this pot and what comes out is this like watered down mixture that just didn't, it wasn't satisfying to me, you know?
Sure.
It was like a really weak broth, you know? And I'm like, wait a minute, I put a big giant pile of carrots in there. Why is it a weak broth?
Yeah.
So I started taking pictures. I mean, that's a whole other, you know, discussion about, you know, after I started taking pictures, how that got anywhere. But
right.
But there was this idea that, you know, I'm going to go out on my own and do this. I mean, step one in many ways was leaving the agency I used to work at to go do what I did freelance for 5 years. You know,
right.
And I would go in-house for pitches and that kind of stuff. But I generally worked at home, which was sort of a step one, getting used to not having a paycheck all the time.
So that was a tough one.
Right. But I actually was making more money at that point than I was mm-hmm. making at my job. You know, the most money I've made was when I was working doing freelance computer stuff.
Right.
And back in the heyday when you could actually make money doing that stuff.
Yeah. Before templates.
Yeah, exactly. But so by the time I wanted to do photography, it's not like I had to completely change my lifestyle and drop everything. It was, I'm just, instead of doing that, I'm doing this, you know? But it gave me that sense of ownership that I wanted.
Sure.
Which is one of the real big reasons that I do what I do.
Well, I think anyone that's contemplating a creative career, there has to be some of that wanting to put your stamp on something, wanting to put something out into the world that can be pointed to as definitively yours.
Yeah. I'm looking for the upside. I want the praise. Some people mm-hmm. are terrified of the downside of being blamed for it going bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And of course, sometimes I do stuff that people don't like and I have no one to blame but myself. So there's that side of it too, but I'm willing to take that risk in order to make that happen, you know? But I guess my point is that standing up and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to put it all on the line and I'm going to go out and start a business or start doing photography for a living or just even start making art and showing it to other people on Google Plus community. You know, I've never shown anything to anybody, but here I am showing work to another 300 photographers.
Right.
That's
which, and we've got people there. We've got people that have never shown anything to anyone, you know, publicly.
That's a huge step. And that's an
enormous step.
That's a mental leap that you take that you say, you know what, my stuff is good enough. I'm proud enough of this that I want to show it and learn from it and move forward.
Right. So for you, it was a conscious decision to go, I have to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like I'm not going to sell, as my famous line is, I don't want to sell toothpaste for the rest of my life.
Right. Right.
And I was working on Colgate at the time. So,
I was at it, came at it from a different way. Our division at Universal was sold. So we came into work and it was like, you and these other 5,000 people are gone. You don't work here anymore.
That sucks.
Yeah. And it was like, wait a minute. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So that decision was kind of made for us. And there was that, but there's that still that period of adjustment where you go from, I know what I'm doing every day. I may not be completely, soul satisfied by it, but I know what I'm doing every day.
Sure.
And there's a comfort there that you fall into. There's a rhythm that you fall into.
Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, there's the, oh crap moment of, you know, now what do I do? But there's also a moment of unlimited possibility.
Yeah.
There's a moment where you go, okay, I've got X number of dollars in the bank that I've saved up. I'm never going to be in this position again. I have zero responsibility and I have the world in front of me. What do I do?
Unlimited cosmic power.
Yeah.
Itty bitty living space.
Yeah. So, but there is that. And then you start kind of, for me, I went back to, okay, I'm 9 years old with a box of Prismacolor pencils. What do I want to do?
Yep. Yeah. And it's scary to make that decision.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's still terrifying.
And so when somebody does make that decision, I know how hard it is to do that. So if somebody's going to do that, I have great respect for it.
Yes.
Not everyone has great respect for it, you know. Yeah.
But contrary to what your parents may have told you, the world does need you. The world does need people who aspire beyond what they think they're capable of.
Yeah, the famous Jeffrey Storrs quote from last week, the world needs dreamers.
They do. The world does need dreamers.
And you know, there are people in my life, there are, let's say, parental figures. There are people who give me crap, you know?
Sure.
They give me the, hey, are you ever going to go get another job? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. As if to say, you know, that what you do here, look, here's the thing. If you're a freelancer, if you're a photographer, if you're a dancer, if you're a writer, if you put more into your job than you ever will working for someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's yours. The whole thing is yours.
Yeah. The good, the bad. There's, I believe that there is more energy expended on those people doing it themselves, whether you're a small business owner and you're the top of the heap for your business, or you're a freelancer doing some sort of creative endeavor. It's 24/7. It's not 9 to 5.
And I will say that Heather, who has a 9 to 5 job, that she doesn't particularly like. So she's in one of those people who, you know, wishes they could do something else, you know, and she's working on it, but you know, there's that thing there. Stands up for me in these situations, you know, will say to somebody, don't you understand? He works more hours than you will ever work.
Yeah.
He works harder than he worked when he had a job, or he works harder than I do.
Yeah.
You know, at what he does.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, on a tiny, tiny scale, how many times have you and I talked at 1 a.m. about code?
Yeah, sure.
You know, where you're like, I can't get this thing to work. Or I'm like, you know what? I need help. I need another pair of eyes on this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And like that kind of stuff happens, right? You know? And so when somebody questions it like that, it's frustrating because it's kind of like, don't you understand how hard it was for me to actually do this?
Sure.
It's difficult. You know, I don't make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. I don't, you know what I mean? Like that this is a struggle every day just to keep this going. I don't need you second guessing my dream.
Well, it's not, yeah, it goes from objective commentary about the job that you're doing to a very personal attack on your lifestyle choice.
Well, especially for somebody like me who this is very much a huge chunk. It's 60% of my self image, you know,
sure,
is my work and what I'm doing with it. This is not just like, oh, I've decided to become, you know, get a job laying bricks and that's, you know, what I do. It's because I didn't want to have a regular job. Okay, that's great. But, you know, I'm doing something that labels me in a really big way. You
right.
know, that people look at my work and they judge me upon my work. Like I'm putting it all out there. And here you are like questioning me putting it all out there, you know, questioning right. the very foundation of all that and doing it with sort of this, with like a little, like a smirk or a smile or a like, oh, that's really cute kind of thing.
Right.
Oh, it offends me.
Yeah. Well, it's you're back at the kids table getting patted on the head.
Exact. No, totally that, you know, it's like, oh, someday you'll grow up and figure it out.
Yeah. You know. Oh, that's our Billy. He'll get it together soon.
Yeah, and but I think that, you know, that people there's you know, if you're going to be a dreamer and as Jeffrey says, the world needs dreamers. You can't listen to anybody. when they say that you should stop dreaming. You know. And look, you know, you said to me the other day, you don't believe that you could do anything.
I don't.
Yeah. What was the example you gave?
Well, it was like, you know, me playing football or basketball. If I had to suddenly decide I want to play for the Knicks or the Nets or whatever,
you might break your hip.
That was good.
Sorry, keep going.
Anyway, you know, I can't do that. I know that I'm not going to do that. You know, or if I want, you know, I'm never going to be Robert Rauschenberg. I'm never going to have that impact on the art world that Rauschenberg did or Pollock.
Well, that one you might. You don't know. I could see the argument that you were never going to be playing for the Jets, but not that anyone would ever want to play for the Jets. But I digress. but as far as like something within your sphere, you know,
right?
I my goal is to become, you know, the greatest portrait photographer of my generation. Might that happen? It could.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, that's not outside of the realm of possibility. Yeah. It's what I do. I just have, that's my goal. I just need to keep getting better and better and better. But there's this, but if that's my sort of endpoint, God, pure 100% perfection goal, which probably won't happen, but that's the place I've got to aim for all the time. You can't let anybody detract you from that and say, oh, why don't you just, you know, go take pictures of kids at a high school and, you know, you'll make more money or whatever it is.
You definitely have to be very singular in your focus.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, don't listen to other people, because the people who try to tear down your dreams are the same people who don't have dreams of their own.
I would, as a general rule, I would agree with that.
You know, because otherwise they'd have respect and understand that your dream is just as important as their dream, whatever it
is. Now, they may not understand it, and that is something completely different.
They don't understand that they're offending you?
No. That they don't understand what you're after. You know, I believe that I have met people who just, it was so far out of their realm to say, I'm going to go out on my own. I'm not going to punch a clock. I'm not going to wear a name tag. I'm going to try and do my own thing. That is so far out of other people's comfort zones. And that's okay. It's when they start disparaging you for wanting to do it yourself that I have a problem with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. It's completely cool. If you want to go into work every day and do, that's fine.
Yeah. And there's
fine.
And there are people who say, yeah, there are people who look at you and go, man, I could never do that. I'm envious of you.
Yeah.
Like, and that's cool.
That's different.
Cause that's showing a certain amount of respect for the pain of the decision, you know?
Sure.
And there are people who go to work as accountants, as bricklayers, as car mechanics, who are artists in themselves, right? You know,
yes.
I know attorneys who are miserable, but I also know a few attorneys who love their jobs, work 100 hours a week because they just enjoy it.
Yeah, and they're probably amazing at it.
Yeah, because what they make, their arguments are art. You know, as we've said, Tiger Woods' golf swing is art.
Yeah.
There is art in every job.
Absolutely.
We're talking about more the people who do these things and can't stand them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the idea that art follows passion.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And if the passion's there, that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't listen to all these people because you're the only person who can make yourself happy.
Well, what was the last episode of The Candid Frame? We talked about this a little bit. The girl that left her six-figure job, decided to just travel around the country and started taking pictures. And a year later, she's photographing events for Airstream, and she's doing these cool sort of street by the side of the road portrait type things.
Yep, yep.
She's just out doing her thing. She's living this passion. She's living this dream. Allison Turner, right. And her friends were like, what are you, nuts?
Yeah.
You're going to what?
Right. Because all her friends are attorneys and corporate whatever, you know, it's like the idea that she's going off and doing this thing is crazy pants.
Sure. What it seems that she has found is not only an awakening for a creative passion, but there's been an emotional awakening associated with taking that leap.
Yeah. Or it seems like there has been. Yeah.
Seems like it. Yeah.
But I mean, the question is, I mean, are you and I just as bad because we rail on people who who are playing it safe?
I play. Ooh, okay. Hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. How much time do we have?
We have time.
I, despite my wanting to be this, you know, sort of freelancy entrepreneurial bon vivant kind of person, I play it.
I'm sorry. Bon vivant.
You know, I play it very close to the vest. I don't take risks the way I aspire to still.
Why not?
I don't know. I've talked to, you know, my guy about it, and I can't put a bead on why, what I'm still afraid of. There is this idea that I still have more to do. I still have further that I can go. And, you know, when one of the things that we talked about yesterday doing the previous version of the show, and you brought up was my parents, that
yeah.
I wanted to be at a place, and I can't define what that place is, but I wanted to be at a place before I lost my mom. I wanted her to be able to see that I'm okay, that I'm happy, that I'm doing what I'm passionate about, that I'm doing what I love, and that it's okay.
Are you doing it?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
But I don't know that I was content in it or that I accepted it. I mean, I was going through the motion of it, but when she died, it was still very much a struggle. And I think...
Well, and you said that you didn't paint for years after she died.
I didn't, yeah, I didn't paint. I didn't pick up a brush for a couple of years.
My reaction, my own father just was the opposite. And so I ask you, why didn't it make you think, my God, she's dead? No offense.
None taken.
This could happen to me at any time. What am I waiting for?
Well, and
this is it. I've got, you know, X heartbeats and then it's over. Three of them just went by as I was asking myself this question, you know?
Yeah. And I think once I sort of came once I kind of came back into the light after she died, that was kind of the realization was, what are you waiting for? Nobody. Now I still have a ways to go, but you know, for the last 3+ years, I've been a writer. I've written about photography. I've written about things that inspire me. I've written about painters. I've written, you know, that's a pretty good gig.
Yeah.
You know, am I making enough to go buy a, you know, Porsche, whatever? No.
A Lamborghini Countach from 1986.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But do I care? Right. No, because that's not me.
Right.
You know, what I get to do is I get to get up every day and look around and see what inspires me and share that inspiration with other people. And on Tuesdays, I get to talk about it for a couple hours.
Right.
That's a pretty damn good gig.
Yeah, sure.
And I have no illusion about how lucky I am to be able to do this. It's a lot of work. But at the end of the day, I am absolutely thankful for the chance to get to do this every day.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that to be honest, I think that's another thing that people sometimes miss is to be thankful, be appreciative, be receptive to how amazing it is that you get to go pick up a camera and make a living making pictures, or a brush, make a living making paintings, or whatever it is. There's a certain amount of gratitude that I wasted a lot of years not realizing that I had bestowed on me, as it were.
Right.
And that's what I, man, that's what kind of bums me out about when mom died, is because she didn't see that.
Yeah.
She was pre this realization.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
It's yeah. I mean, I get that too. It's like, if my father could see me now, you know?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And that's some of the people who try to tear me down. I mean, the big part of me in my head is just like, dude, I'm fairly well regarded in my industry.
Yeah.
People know who I am, and I, you know, I have a following, and if you Google me and you Google your name, I'm doing much better in the world of trying to put something out there than you are, you know?
Well, yeah.
So you're trying to tell me that I'm making a mistake because,
yeah,
you know, I'm not, I don't know, buying a house in Greenwich or whatever. Like that's, it's crazy. You know, don't put your stuff on me.
Yeah. Well, that's a great thing, right? Don't put your stuff on me.
Yeah.
And that's often what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what was your mother's adage?
Happiness is an inside job. She told me that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
That
you didn't believe it.
No. I didn't believe half of the things that I have since realized to be true.
Yeah.
You know, that if you're looking outside, if you're looking for another person to make you happy, not going to happen. If you're looking for gear, if you're looking for a job, a car, clothing, whatever it is, it's not going to make you happy.
Right. Speaking of which, I just bought some of those Levi's 501s on Amazon.
Speaking of making me happy.
I need a new jeans. What do you want from me?
Bill has a little jean obsession.
I don't have a jean obsession. I have one pair of jeans.
Yeah, but no, but...
I bought the dark gray ones. I'm going
to
see if they
have to be a specific style of jeans.
Yeah, I'm really particular. It's Levi's 501s, the original jean.
Yeah.
I'm very hip and in the know.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. It's just I don't know where I'm going with this entire conversation, but it just I guess
you know, what about this? What about this? Take a year, take 6 months, and follow a passion. Whether it's part-time or full-time, follow a passion and see how you feel at the end of that period. Okay. And if you feel amazing, then you know you're on the right track.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know? I mean, it's sort of like when people do photo projects. Like, you know, I could never do this kind of, you know, this 365. I could never take a photograph for every day for a month. But then you do, yeah, and you go, oh my gosh. That unlocked so many things that I hadn't thought about. Now I'm going to go do this. Now I'm going to go do that. Well, try some of those things. And this, look, this is very much the pot calling the kettle black. This is very much me telling people to take risks when I myself am horrible at taking risks.
Put down that stone.
Right? But, you know, it's – I'm getting better about it. And I can tell you that every little bit more that I risk – I feel a little bit better doing it.
Sure. Look, no downside to any thing that you're going to try is going to be as bad as your fantasy of the pain, you know?
Sure.
Failure is never going to feel as bad as you imagine your fear of failure is going to feel.
No. And it's, look, again, very lucky. I, you know, by the sheer geography of where I live, I have a certain amount of things to be thankful for. You know, we talked about this. Had I been born in Syria or Darfur or whatever, we'd have a very different conversation, but
in another language.
It's true.
In Arabic, apparently.
That's right. But there is this idea that everything that I fear, or at least the vast majority of them, it exists. It starts and stops in my head. And I would imagine that for a lot of you out there, it's the same thing. We imagine, to your point, Bill, we imagine that it's going to be this horrible, abysmal end game if we fail at X.
Yeah.
And we try it and it doesn't turn out that way. You know, another sort of pearl from my mother was, you know, there's no such thing as failure.
Yeah.
It just didn't turn out the way you wanted it to.
Yeah. You know, when I started 365 Portraits back in the day, it was really on a whim. I had done a couple annual, like daily, weekly, sort of year-long projects, just random artistic-y kind of stuff before. And then I decided to start doing 365 Portraits because somebody saw my pictures and they said, these portraits are good. You know, come back when you have more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, how could I take more? And I started just doing one a day, and I bought 365portraits.com. And I just started taking pictures. Day one is, you know, was my sister. Day four was my girlfriend at the time. Day, you know, and just random sure. people. And then it, by the time it got to the end of month one, I was like, oh my God, whole month is over already? Like now, you know, I was in it. I was too deep in it. I literally threw myself into the pool and I had to swim, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know
what? And that became your full-time job, didn't it? For, yep. for a year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, I sucked through a lot of my savings and, you know, I made just a little money on the side, but you know, that was my job was, mm-hmm. was putting in the 10,000 hours kind of thing, trying to learn how to do this.
Yeah. And, thank you, Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah. Thanks, Malcolm.
Who you photographed. Thank you.
yeah. Who I was emailing with last week. And I did that and you know what, some days were failures and some days were successes. And, you know, I met a bunch of people and I did a bunch of crazy stuff and even the, but you know, I got to the end of it and earlier in the year and sometime in May, I think it was like May 15th or something. I shot Timothy Greenfield Sanders, who's this big photographer, portrait photographer, who I have a lot of respect for. And, he was very nice to me, but, it was January 1st. So it was the day after I finished. And I was with my mother and my sister and Andrea and we went to the movies. And I remember we got out of the subway at 34th Street and 8th Avenue. I was going to go to the 34th Street Theater there. And I got an email from Timothy writing me saying how great of a job I did and congratulating me for finishing the project.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Which means that he was watching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I got choked up.
Yeah.
Not because, I mean, yes, it was very nice for him to say that. But the idea was that I spent a year doing something and I finished it.
Sure.
And win or lose, good or bad, whether that leads to anything, something got done and there's something to show for it that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That site still gets 600, 800 visitors a day.
Sure.
5 years later, you know, there's this body of work that I created and I decided to do something and I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a satisfaction in that win or lose that is bigger than the fear of failure.
Sure. Well, and just as a side note, this idea that Timothy was watching is so almost prophetic. You don't know who's looking at your work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guarantee you, if you're putting work out there, people are looking at it. You just don't know who,
yeah.
And you don't know what's going to come out of it.
And it kind of makes, and it goes back to the whole thing, the guy questioning my dreams or the woman questioning my dreams. I'm listening to them, but I'm not listening to a world famous portrait photographer who says I do a good job.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If one of them has the stuff to back up their yeah. opinion, you know,
but for many of us, the bad stuff is easier to believe.
Sure. You know, it's that kind of is like in that Bones Brigade documentary where Rodney Mullen says, you know, you can, when you get a certain modicum of success that there's pain in praise.
Yeah.
That there's too much praise. Now I'm not claiming that I get praised that much, but the idea that like, everyone's like, oh my God, those are so wonderful. So wonderful. They almost don't mean anything at a certain point and it almost hurts after a while.
Right.
You know?
A great film, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it.
I watched it again the other day when yeah. Heather was out.
It's really well done.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Especially the Rodney Mullen scenes.
Yeah.
We should put another link in the show notes to that, but I'll pull it up. I don't know. So it's, you know, things happen that you don't expect and sometimes you just gotta do it, you know? I don't know. I say we wrap this up.
You know, yeah. That's just gotta do it. That might be a good slogan.
Yeah. That would look really good on a t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Just got to do it.
That's good stuff. All right, so...
Hey, I got a problem, Bill, real quick.
What's your problem?
I'm looking for some images.
Okay.
I don't have a ton of money.
I see where you're coming from here.
You know what I'm saying here. I need some good quality images.
Yeah.
I need to be able to use them in a variety of places.
Right.
And I'm drawing a blank.
You know what you need, my friend?
What's that?
Shutterstock.com.
There it is.
Do you know how many images they have? How many photos, vectors, illustrations, and video clips they have?
50?
No, more. Higher.
75?
20 million.
Woo!
Yeah. So look, go over to Shutterstock.com, search for that perfect image for your website, ad, publication, or other creative project. They've got everything on there. And I mean, they really do. Look, we're talking to photographers. So, you know, will you need photographs? Well, you know what? You might. You might need photographs to finish that composite that you're doing. And you need, you know, a light switch that you don't have that you need for the thing. Go find it there. It's $19. You can buy the image, you know. And then you know you own it and you didn't steal it from some guy on Flickr like the magazine did to me last week.
Hey, just so you know.
Yeah.
10,085 results for light switch.
Really?
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm talking about, people. They've got everything on there. And you know what I'm impressed by as a former, as a recovering website designer, are the vectors and the illustrations and that stuff.
Yeah.
There's some beautiful stuff in there.
Yeah. There's some really cool stuff. If you're a designer and need like design elements, borders, corner pieces, flourishes.
You know what else I bet you they have? Like video clips. I'm sure there's like aerial photography of, say, New York or something like that, right? So let's say you're doing a video thing and you're, oh, you need the beautiful, you know, gliding shot over the city to like set up some scene. It's like,
right.
This is the kind of place you go. What are you going to go rent a helicopter and fly your own 5D up there? No, of course not. So look, you'll find new images. They add 10,000 images a day.
Yeah.
Right. And they don't charge extra for large files. You can download any image, any size. You pay only one price. There's an iPad app, so you can curate on an iPad to like put stuff in light boxes to show other people, to share, that kind of stuff. You can even get enhanced license if you want to print something out like on a bag or a t-shirt or something like that. Let's say you were making the Just Gotta Do It t-shirt and you needed a big thumbs up illustration. This is the place you can go to get that, right?
Hey, by the way, 789 results for aerial footage New York.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
Right?
But if you go over Shutterstock.com, you can set up a free browse account so you can go look through everything. You don't need a credit card or anything, just like our other sponsors. And when you decide to buy, you can use the offer code PICTURES3 and you'll get 30% off of any package. So you can go in and the crazy thing is not only can you buy these things individually, but if you run a website, and you run a website and you use images all the time because you need this stuff, you can go on there and you can subscribe on these plans. It's like it's a couple $100 a month. And you
starting
can use,
at, yeah,
you
yeah.
can use 25 images per day.
Yeah.
Every okay. day.
Can I just say how cool their footage search result page is? You mouse over the thumbnail and they start playing in a little pop-up.
See, this is pretty cool.
I'm looking at the Chrysler building, aerial view of the Chrysler building at night, and it's just cool.
And, you know, the other thing from the photographer's point of view, go and become a contributor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sell your images.
Yeah. Who is it? Friend of the show, Tim Dobbs.
Tim Dobbs, selling pictures all the time.
Selling pictures all the time. Yeah. They've got a little.
He's making
Facebook
more money than you are, whoever you are, from selling his pictures. I don't have pictures of. Where is he? Wales?
I think he's in Wales.
He's a Welsh, which means he has that crazy accent.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was Welsh once. Didn't understand a word he was saying.
And he's shooting film. So he's even cooler.
Man. Damn that
medium format.
Damn
film.
That Welshman Tim Jobs. and they also have 24-hour support during the week. So you have a problem on a Thursday night, you can give them a call, and and these account reps will take care of you. But say 30% off any package. Pictures3 is the code. Go to Shutterstock.com, check it out, and we thank them very much for their support.
Yep.
What's okay, next?
Honest to God, their preview page is really cool. I gotta close this. back to work.
Put it away, Sidoris.
I know. Hey, we have been remiss in we keep forgetting to talk about this sexy magazine.
It is sexy. Actually, you know, I have a ruler here. Let's measure that.
We're talking about Aperture. They've kind of relaunched their magazine, a fine art photography magazine, safe to say.
Yeah, I would say that. It's a 9 by 12 inches. It's big.
Yeah, it's like 150 pages long.
It's packed with pictures and text.
Yeah.
It's actually really impressive. The one thing you loved in here was that Winogrand stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's a super cool piece on Gary Winogrand. It's a conversation with Philip Lorca de Corsia. Yeah. And
revisiting the Gary Winogrand archive.
Yeah, he was an animal.
Monster, this guy.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. I like, man, sometimes I think street photography almost works better in black and white for me.
Yeah, on matte paper.
Yeah. But he, you know, he, what's kind of cool about this magazine is like some of it's glossy paper, some of it's matte paper. You know, it kind of jumps between it like it's like put together by hand, you know, in a really kind of neat way.
It's got a cool feel to it.
And there's such a disparate amount of work in here. There's tons of stuff in here.
Can I tell you how much I also love these super close-up shots of the camera hardware?
Oh, those are beautiful. Yeah. We could make some of those. We'll play with my Leica when you get here.
There you go.
Yeah, really, really cool magazine. So Aperture Magazine, you can go to Aperture. Is it aperture.org?
I believe so.
Yeah, let's see. Aperture Magazine. aperture.org/magazine. And you could subscribe. I think it's like $20, or you subscribe to it. It comes out 4 times a year. It's like each season. It's seasonal.
Yeah. They've also got a really cool selection of book titles. So if you're looking for...
Oh, they got everything.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
You know what they have there?
What's that?
The Dan Winters books.
Well, not anymore. Isn't Periodicals out of...
Are they completely out of print now?
Periodical Photographs, I believe, is gone.
All right, because I sold my copy for $280 yesterday.
What?
That is crazy, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so anyway, Aperture is great, and they're going to send us some books to take a look at, and we'll tell you about them when we get them.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's lots of really cool stuff they've gotten there that we should all take a look at. So yeah, that's good. What else we got?
Well, it's a little bit of controversy, brouhaha over,
controversy.
Yeah. What is actually a limited edition?
Are we talking about the Billy Egg? The Billy Egg,
Yeah. B-Egg in the house.
Yeah.
So judge ruled that, legal, even your Harvard legal business. A judge ruled that William Eggleston can, and all artists, it's not just William Eggleston.
William Eggleston can do anything he wants. The rest of you suck.
Yeah, the rest of you suck it. that he can make, additional editions of prints. So basically what the ruling kind of in a nutshell means to photographers and artists is that limited edition is kind of relegated to a particular size or a particular print method or a particular paper. But if you change one or more of those things, that constitutes a new edition. Is that fair?
That's kind of what he said. Yeah. I don't think it was as much. I mean, the big differentiation. Okay. So back in the day, Eggleston used to print all his stuff using dye transfer.
Right. Which is complicated, right?
Which is very complicated, involves a whole lot of mastery in the darkroom. He didn't do this himself. He had a guy who did it for him. Basically what you do is you're printing, you know, in CMYK printing, you have, you know, your magenta, your yellow, your cyan, and your black layers. And the printer is overlaying them over each other. Well, it puts the black down first, I guess. And then, I don't know. What order actually is it?
It's all simultaneous, though.
Is it?
It's
CMYK?
Yeah. Isn't it?
No, I think it's they do it in layers. And there's registration involved in that, too. Hmm. Anyway, but this is a guy in the dark room basically creating these essentially sort of gelatin dye or you know, dye overlays that you sit on top of each other.
Right.
And they have to be perfectly registered So right.
And you're
so,
you're doing all that registration by hand.
Yeah. This is amazing. Imagine like printing out just the cyan of a picture and trying to lay it over just the yellow of a picture and line it up perfectly so that when they sit on top of each other and you smush it down, it sits exactly perfect. It's next to impossible. And I'm sure there's all kinds of tricks for doing this, but this is what guys used to do. But the practical upshot of this, the cool thing about this, the saturation and the quality and the depth that you get from dye transfer prints is unbelievable. It really is amazing. Like you look at it compared to an inkjet print and you're like, oh man, look at the crap that is. You know, it really does look that good. It just pops off the page. So Eggleston's stuff is famous for being sort of the first color work that was regarded well by art. And in some ways, the reason why it was regarded well by art was the craftsmanship of these prints because they were dye transfer. Now, no one, I think there's one guy who still does dye transfer now, and you can, you know, hire him to do a print for $800 or whatever it is, but no one does it because you can't even get the equipment for it anymore. Eggleston sold a lot of his prints, these editions of his prints back in the day, as dye transfer. So say the tricycle print, which isn't actually called tricycle. It's called like America or something like that. But
does he have to say it like that too? America.
America. We live in America. Yes, George W. Bush is the salesman. So there's the famous picture of the tricycle, right, that everyone knows. So he sold some dye transfer prints of that, an edition of, I don't know, let's say it was 10, just for the sake of argument. I don't know exactly how many it was. And he sold them years ago at a small size, say 11 by 14 or whatever it was. And that was the edition of prints. He has recently reprinted that inkjet big. How big were they? They were
like 30 poster size. They're like 50, you know, 46, 50 inches, something like that.
Okay. So big. And sold those. And the guy, one of the guys who owns one of the old dye transfer prints said that it diluted the worth, the value of his original print.
Right.
That's original.
He supposedly paid $250,000 for this 17-inch dye transfer print.
Okay, right. It happens, right?
Yeah.
And so this guy's pissed that he thinks that his thing's going to be worth less because there's more of these out there now.
Well, yeah. His argument was that art, the value of art is based primarily on scarcity.
Right. And you know what? It is. But that's like a basis. You know, if everyone can have a copy, there's a million copies out there. If everyone can have one, then they're worth less individually, right? Because if I don't want to buy yours, I could just buy somebody else's,
right?
Who will sell to me for cheaper. And are there that many people who want these prints or whatever it is? Now, Eggleston went and made a lot of money on this new print sale, like hundreds of millions of, you know, millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think the almost 600,000, the 5-foot print of tricycle.
Crazy.
Sold for almost $600,000.
Now the judge basically says, "Well, it's a different product. Mm-hmm. This is a different piece of imagery. This is a different work because it's big and it uses a different process." Now, would one or the other be enough? Like, if it was just a bigger print and it was dye transfer, or if it was a small print that was inkjet, you know, would that somebody? Or is it this is distinct enough because of multiple things that are different about it? You see what I'm saying?
It seems like that's the case. It seems like there are enough sort of boxes that have been checked that it's different.
Yeah, and I don't know if they exactly defined that in the stuff that he talked about, you know, that if the judge's ruling defined exactly how much needed to be different. Now, basically he says Eggleston can sell what he wants. And I, as an artist, I like the idea that some legal guy and some art dealer didn't tie the wrists of me saying what I can and cannot do with my art. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain amount of trust that Eggleston has possibly lost with the art world, a certain respect because, you know, will you buy from him again if you know that this edition that you're buying may actually be re-editioned later, you know?
Right.
So he may be shooting himself in the foot a little bit, but I think it's a different enough thing that it's not a big deal. Plus that is such a famous picture that if anything, the dye transfer prints will become more valuable because they're the originals.
Yeah. See, that,
I don't have this other edition. You have the original die transfer edition. Yeah. And that's a whole other ball of wax.
And is there some notion that this was done by hand? Yours was just basically came off of a printer.
Right. Yeah.
Is there more art to this art because of the process used to create it?
Right. And it's the age thing, right, too. It's the original editions of it, you know, and that's what the really cool people. So I don't know that in this particular case it would make that much of a difference. If I sold 5 copies of something and then I went and sold 500 more copies of it, I could see people getting pissed, you know. But if, sure, I do a completely different size in a different way and whatever it is, because it's some famous image and I'm famous enough that you would know that image, whether or not it gets into these weird areas, you know?
Sure.
So I think that the judge was right. And I think the market will figure this out in that if Eggleston goes and does this and somebody puts out too many editions, then those editions will start selling for less initially. And there's sort of a diminishing returns kind of thing, you know?
Sure. Sure. I mean, this is kind of an experiment, isn't it? It's the first time that this decision has been rendered. And it's also the first time that an artist, certainly of Eggleston's caliber, has done something like this, and it may backfire.
It does bother me a little bit that, it bothers me when artists go back and rehash old stuff to seemingly make money.
Well, I mean, okay. So let's say you've got some prints or you've got some images that you've made prints of and they're color and you've sold out of the limited editions. Now you go and run them through Silver Effects and go, look, now they're black and white.
Yeah, no, that's not as much for me as the famous people. It's like, you know, when the Chuck Closes of the world go and make a new work based upon that original.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Where they almost become a derivative of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. It's like, you know, everyone knows that famous picture of Philip Glass that Chuck Close painted. Oh, well, look, it's that same thing of Philip Glass done with, you know, I don't know, whatever, dots instead of squares.
Right.
And you know, now we're selling those for $50,000 for the tiny version of a print of a, you know, a lithograph or whatever. You know, it's just at a certain point, it's just kind of like, you know what, go do something new.
Right.
So Eggleston, why are you selling more of the tricycle? You have enough money. You were born into money.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to respond to.
You understand what I'm saying, though. Like sort of like, yeah, you know what, go sell new stuff. You know, I'd love to buy a new Eggleston print because eventually Billy Egg will die and, you know, it'll be worth a fortune.
Yeah.
If you suddenly had, let's say somebody dropped 10 or 20 grand on you, right? Gift. Would you ever consider buying art with it as an investment?
Yes. Not as an investment.
Not as an investment. Okay.
I would absolutely consider buying art because I like having those things around. I like, you know,
is it silly to imagine doing it as an investment? Like, you know, go buy, what's his name? Meyerowitz, you know, go over to go buy a Saul Leiter print for $8,000.
Oh, see, now I'd love to have a Saul Leiter print.
You know, do you think that
we're going to get grief from the community though, mentioning,
I know, but do you think that that's a bad idea?
No, I don't. I mean, no, I don't. This is the short answer. Okay. I've got a few pieces of art, and I didn't
art collector.
I didn't buy them though with the intent that they would go up in value. I bought them because because
your buddy Shep like wanted to hook you up.
Yeah, right. I genuinely like the guy's work.
Right,
and it speaks to me. His work speaks to me. I wish I could afford one of the, you know, giant original collages, but I can't. But if I had the money, I would buy it.
Right.
You know, I not because it's going to go up in value, but because I've seen them close up and I'm amazed at his process and I like the end results. And right. So, yeah, I think art is fantastic.
Okay. All right.
The thing that I don't like, and this is sort of a weird thing just pertinent to me, is if you're buying it only as an investment,
yeah,
that's kind of weird to me. Like, you could care less what the thing actually looks like. You're just going to buy it and put it in storage.
A little bit of both, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it on a wall that gets direct sunlight, but sure. I'll have it behind UV glass, you know?
Yeah. Okay. As long as you can appreciate it and enjoy it. The idea of buying this thing that somebody created because they wanted to bestow beauty into the world and you just put it away and let it appreciate, quote unquote.
Right.
I have a problem with that.
That freaks you out.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't like that. I think it's disrespectful to the artist because they created this to be seen, whether by themselves or the world at large. They didn't create it to be locked up in a vault somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel about the Japanese collectors who collect Leicas and put them in Lucite boxes and set them on a shelf.
Is that a thing? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It's weird.
All right.
Like many things in Japan. Just offended 66 million people.
That's right. Thanks.
Our listenership drops by 3,000. You know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
This last weekend, I went to my mother's house. And
yes.
What? Yeah. No, I went up to my mother's house in Connecticut, and I had her pull out pictures from my childhood. And of her and of my father and my grandfather. Like, you know, the shoeboxes of family pictures.
Sure, sure.
And I said, you know what? Like, let's put these somewhere else other than in a shoebox in your attic. Because you know what? There could be a flood. There could be a fire. And then all these memories, you know, whenever there's floods and fires, the things that people really miss are the family pictures. Other things could be replaced.
Yeah. Those are, in fact, statistically, that's what people go for first.
Right. So I was trying to be proactive about it and said, you know what? Let's go in and take pictures of the pictures at least. Now, I could have brought a scanner up or, you know, I think she actually has a scanner. I could have pulled a scanner out and done one at a time, but that's very time consuming. And really, if you ever actually scan a photo print from like the mid 70s or something or the 80s, there's no information in them. They're really weak. Like if you get 150 or 200 pixels per inch out of them, you're lucky. So your average 4 by 6 inch print, you're actually only going to get, you know, 800 pixels out of it, something like that.
Sure.
Honestly, you know.
Yeah. No, a lot of my childhood photos were on Polaroid.
Yeah. And then, you know, talk about like lack of information.
Oh, they're horrible now.
And that's and that's the same thing too with focus and that kind of stuff. Stuff you never noticed. Oh my God, look at that picture of me and my dad. And then you realize that it's actually focused on the white fence behind you guys. You know, you ever have that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or if anything is even sharp at all, I've got a ton of photos where the entire thing is soft.
Yeah, right. So I pulled out all these pictures and I pulled out, I don't know, 100 pictures or so in a big stack. And I had my 5D with me. I had a 50 millimeter lens. And what I really should have done is brought a little tripod up and set up a little stand and just, you know, set it down. But instead I just handheld and I fired a flash on the wall sort of across from me so that it would sort of light up the room a little bit. And I just took pictures of, like, four pictures at a time. I just went 1, 2, 3, 4 in a grid. And
wait, so you're shooting, hold on, you're shooting down, like they're on the ground, you're shooting above.
They're on a table, I'm shooting down on them from
okay, and
a
you're
foot
firing
or two away.
Just kind of a
I'm shooting the flash sort of straight out from me against the wall so that it sort of bounces. It's far enough away, and sometimes you get glare because they're glossy things, but you know, you move the light a little bit or whatever. Mostly it was just to have these pictures somewhere else and to do it fast and whatever. So I took, I don't know, say I took 50 pictures and, you know, there's four in each or something like that. I took a couple hundred pictures. And now they exist somewhere else other than in my mother's thing. Now, are they super high quality? Am I going to print them out 8x10? No, but you know what? There's no way I was going to do that even if I had the real print. It's fine for the memory, which is, you know, what you really want. As a backup, it's good. So anyway, go ahead.
No, I was just, it's what that image evokes, not the per pixel sharpness of the image itself.
Yeah, this is family pictures. You know, I just want the picture of me and my dad when I was a kid, you know, that kind of thing. So I took all these pictures and I brought them home and I need to export them and then save them up in my Dropbox or something just so they're somewhere else, you know? But I just like the idea that we should all, I mean, it goes back to our backup conversation of the past few weeks.
Yeah.
So go back up your home, your family photos, you know, take an hour or two after dinner one night and pull them out and take pictures of them or scan them or do whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cause you don't know that they're ever going to be there. And then you can share them with family on Facebook and then everyone can get the pictures and, you know, there's all that kind of stuff. Who bought the Lomo film scanner?
Patrick.
Of course, Patrick did. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. He got in on the Kickstarter thing.
So this thing, there's a Kickstarter Lomography smartphone film scanner. So you stick your iPhone, it's this box, you stick your iPhone in, you stick a strip of film in the other end, and you can use your iPhone camera to take little stills of your, basically scan your negatives, but not, this is not high quality, right? This is
right.
This is just trying to make something that you can stick up on Facebook.
Right. I mean, I think it's a fantastic product for Lomo to put out.
Oh, it's a neat, silly little idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is not what you want to do if you want to do them for archiving and put them in your,
absolutely.
Know. Right. How much did they cost? Do you know?
I think the Kickstarter, when the Kickstarter is over now, but I think you could get them for $40 when they first started.
Okay. That's not that bad.
No.
I mean, ultimately it's probably a piece of plastic, so somebody's getting screwed, but still neat idea. You know, this is sort of a poor man's version of the macro lens, taking pictures of the slides thing that we've looked at before.
Right.
Which actually I was going to try this week because there were a bunch of slides and I've stuck them on my scanner and they look all right and whatever it is. But I wanted to try doing it with the macro lens just to see if they came out well.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody said that they look really good that way.
A friend of mine, they just sold his parents' house.
Okay.
And his parents moved into a new kind of facility type thing.
Sure.
Like a community type thing. And went through and found boxes and boxes of photos. His parents are from Holland, and at one point, they had a family farm in Holland, and the farm was taken over by Nazis.
Oh, wow! The pictures of Nazis coming in and taking over.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, and that's crazy.
It's weird. They actually, when his father was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old, these SS soldiers thought it would be cute to dress him up in one of their uniforms. And he's got a photo of his father in this SS uniform.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Not our finest hour. But interesting from a historical standpoint, from a photographic standpoint as well.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. So.
Ugh. Hey, you know, one thing we didn't mention before, I just want to make sure we get in, is that Photographer's Guide to Copyright?
Yeah, exactly. Photo Shelter teamed up with ASMP and produced this free downloadable PDF guide to copyright and fair use. And it's got, you know, court cases of when copyright was upheld and when it didn't stand up. And it's a really fantastic resource for kind of giving you an idea of what is and isn't allowed.
Jay Mazel versus Sony. Jay Mazel versus.
We'll put a link in the show notes, but go check it out. Cause I know there's a lot of misinformation out there.
It's free, but it's well written. And I stuck it up and on my phone so I could like read it on the train when I get a chance.
Yeah. It's good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, it's well done. I'm a big fan of ASMP. I'm a member and I'm a big fan of theirs. I have my press card from ASMP. So if I ever get pulled over, you know, I could be like, don't you understand? I'm press.
Yeah, I'm fancy.
Back the F off. that's how I roll. You don't roll that way?
No, I believe it.
All right, what else is next?
There's been some discussion that you and I have had about the validity of the iPhone as a professional photographic tool.
Or invalidity.
Come on now. New York Times, cover of the New York Times, Instagram photos of the Yankees. I'm going to say it again. I think that the iPhone is the most important digital camera ever released.
Womp, 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 womp.
Yeah. No, I do.
No, look, I think it's important in the sense that everyone uses it.
Well, it's gotten more people shooting, sharing, and experiencing photography than pretty much any other camera out there, right?
Yeah, okay, I see where you're going with that.
Is it technically the best thing? No, but
right.
But it's, you know, it's, I think it's gotten more people enjoying or attempting to enjoy photography than anything out there.
Yeah, okay, no, that's fair. And look, it's fine. And if you're printing little, like you are on, if you're printing essentially like a Polaroid size image or a 3x3 or 4x4 image on New York Times, I think it's fine. You know, I think that it's kind of silly. If you had shot that picture with a 5D and then took it into Photoshop and put a cheesy, super vignette and a cheesy filter and a frame on it and then handed it off to a magazine, the magazine would be like, what the hell did you put all this crap on here for? But somehow it's okay when it's on iPhone.
There's a kitsch factor.
Yeah. I think it's going to all look very dated soon.
Well, okay. And this is a specific kind of, you know, Instagrammy look. I mean, there are people out there doing some pretty fantastic work with,
and the people who are keeping it pretty clean or just editing just a little bit. I do that sometimes. I'll take a picture, pull it into the Photoshop Express or whatever the heck it is, and go in and play with contrast and you know, color and that kind of brightness and put something together that I like and then save it and then share it. That's fine. You know,
right.
I think the filters thing is, I don't like the filters thing. I think that's lazy.
Well, and I think that the filtering your photos into oblivion has become ubiquitous with iPhone or camera phone photos.
Yes.
I think that's
sad.
Yeah. Well, on some level, it's a crutch for the technical limitations of the device, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, we don't have a ton of information to work with by comparison to a DSLR. So if we make it look old timey, somehow we excuse the technical limitations.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but there's an article on anontech.com, which is a big tech dork site. And one of the guys who works there who sometimes reviews...
Did you just call it a big tech dork site?
Oh, nice. Yeah. This kid... Okay. I've been reading this website since late 90s. So for 15 years or so. It was originally started by this guy, Anand Shimpi, who's still around, who still runs the site. When he was, I think, 14 years old, and he got a video card from, you know, like a gaming video card, like a Vudu, whatever the first, you know, one of those
is. Okay, sure.
And he decided to make a website and review the video card. And then he started writing people and getting review stuff and writing reviews. And now within years, even when he was in high school, that's like what he did full time. And had advertising, he was making hundreds of thousands of dollars on the site. Like he's a big deal.
Like a Tom's Hardware kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. But he started it when he was 14. And he went to college and got his degree in computer engineering, and now he's out and he's still working the site, and there's all these people. Anyway, the long and short of it is a guy who writes on there wrote an article called Understanding Camera Optics and Smartphone Camera Trends. And this guy, Brian Klug, I think he has a PhD in optical engineering or something. He's not messing around. This guy like really knows his stuff. Yeah, no, he's got a BS in optical sciences and engineering from the University of Arizona. Okay, this guy knows his stuff. And basically he talks about the physics of all this stuff, and basically that smartphone cameras, whether it's 5 megapixels or 8 megapixels, you're not getting 8 megapixels. You know, that not all pixels are equal, and that there's no per pixel sharpness because the optical system isn't big enough to do that. You know, it's not physically able for the wavelengths packed in that much density to actually get that much at that size sensor and all the rest of it. And it's pretty interesting. So basically his argument is that we should just go to lower megapixel cameras that have more dynamic range and all that kind of stuff, that it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah, but you're basing this on sort of
on science.
Yeah, no, you're basing it on, well, you know, the iPhone can't have a black pixel and a white pixel next to each other. Well, so what?
Right. Okay. Yes, sure. So what? But that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that like this is not a tool This is buying the crappy hammer at the dollar store, not going and getting a good hammer that's going to last you a long time and will allow you to do all kinds of stuff. It's fine to have a thing in your pocket. I think it's fine if that's what you want to use. If you have perfect light, it's fine. You know, if you're not going to print a big poster, it's fine. But if that's fine, then why do we even bother with digital SLRs and medium format and large format? Obviously, at some point, there's control and there's quality considerations, and not all of that gets thrown out the window. Look, the equivalent of this was Polaroids back in the 60s. Were there artists doing stuff with Polaroids? Sure. Did Polaroids sometimes end up getting printed in a magazine? Yeah, sure. But it didn't mean that everyone switched and started using Polaroids for everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's just my point. That, like, it's fine. I take pictures with it too, but I find it immensely frustrating when I try to use it as a real tool. Like, I feel the limitations of it drive me crazy. Oh, it's, you know, too wide angle for the shot that I want. Or, oh, look at that stuff blows out white. Or, oh, I can't get the exposure and the focus to be exactly where I want them to be. I just want a stupid exposure compensation like I do in the Android camera. You know, like little things like that just drive me crazy. So for me, it just doesn't do it. And it's kind of like, why don't I just use a real camera? I have real cameras. Now, if you're just taking a picture and putting it up on Instagram or Facebook, great. Okay. Sure. And yes, sometimes with perfect light, you can take a picture that's worthy of printing. You know, it doesn't stop you from lining up a shot right and having good light and composition, all the things that a photographer needs. True, that allows you to do that. But why hamstring yourself, you know, just to make a point? I think a lot of the people who are doing it are really into it just because they're getting press from having done it with an iPhone. Not because the iPhone is actually the preferred tool that they want to use.
Okay. I see. I'm on the other side on that.
Okay.
I think that there are some really amazing. I think there's some amazing work being done with it because of what it is. I think, you know, Jack Hollingsworth is doing some great stuff. Richard Coach Hernandez is doing some great stuff, and I think the people who are embracing...
Do they tell people that they were taken with an iPhone? Yeah, they do.
I don't know. I mean, Jack Hollingsworth, big iPhone user. And in one of the videos that I was watching, he was doing... I mean, he shoots a lot for hospitality and travel and has shot a lot of client images with his iPhone. And... you know, under the right conditions,
within its limitations, and you're not printing that big, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, open that up, look at it 100% on the screen, you're like, it kind of looks like an ugly digital image.
You know, but isn't that part of the problem with
what, opening up and looking at 100%?
Yeah, I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, if all you're ever seeing it is an 800 pixel thing on Facebook, every image looks good. You know, mm-hmm. like. You know, the quality of anything looks good when you shrink it down to something that size. I don't know. It's fine. Look, we can agree to disagree on this. And if that floats your boat and makes people, you know, happy, then more power to them. Don't listen to me. Just like the whole stuff with the, with the dream stuff we talked about at the beginning, you know,
yep,
like if you think that something I say pisses you off and you're don't listen to me. What the hell do I know?
Yeah.
You know?
No, no kidding. I'm the same way.
It's just an opinion, you know, like, you know, you have opinion. I have an opinion. Like, just for me, do people take good pictures of the iPhone? Yeah, of course they do. Do I find it satisfying? No, I don't.
You know, the hardest thing for me about using an iPhone is holding it out in front of me.
Yeah, I don't like looking at the screen.
There's that weird, I mean, part of what I love about photography is locking out the rest of the world and just seeing the viewfinder. Now, that being said, I've gotten used to, in a very short amount of time, kind of the best of both worlds, this rangefindery idea of seeing what my photograph is going to be, but then seeing a little bit beyond either side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I really have come to love that way of taking pictures.
Yeah. I mean, this Coach Hernandez guy, these pictures are beautiful, but yeah. It had nothing to do with the iPhone that he got these pictures.
Sure.
If anything, these pictures could have been even better if he had used a, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I don't know. That's it's at the point at which people are not the people at the point at which people aren't saying I took this with an iPhone. That's when it will be a real tool. Cause then it's not like, I don't say I took my pictures with a camera, you know, and a Canon 5D Mark II.
Sure. Okay. I got that.
So it's like, you know, at the point at which it's no longer a shtick, that's the point at which you no longer mention that it was taken with an iPhone.
That makes sense. Okay. I'll give you that.
Hey, we should wrap this up, but we got to talk about Squarespace and then we got to talk about our photographer of the week.
Squarespace. Hey, you know, friend of the show, Ibarianex Perillo.
Yeah.
Brand new website. What did he use?
He coded it by hand.
No.
Oh.
He used Squarespace.
He used Squarespace.
He did.
Of course he did. Yeah, it's the best. He did.
It's everything you need.
To create an exceptional website. Is that where you're going with that? look, you guys all know this. They got their beautiful templates. They got the drag and drop interface, right? You can drag images over into the browser and it pops it on the page. You got responsive design. So these things work all the way down to your cell phone and it still looks good. They got social.
You're not uploading all kinds of crazy sizes for images. They take care of all that on it.
Yeah, you put up one that's a fairly big size and they'll shrink it so it's all the right size for what you need. Social media integration. You write a new post in the blog that you put on the site. And you could send it out to Twitter and Facebook and whatever else, right?
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
What I really want to do is sell stuff.
Well, you know what? You're in luck, Jeffrey, because there's a new e-commerce product that Squarespace has out. So for $24 a month, you get their e-commerce stuff in their business account. And you can sell digital goods. You can sell real goods. You set up an account with Swipe, so they take credit cards, you know. Let's say I wanted to sell prints, right? And I set up wadmaneditions.com.
Wait, shameless plug.
WADMANED. No. You could go and you could buy one of my prints for a pittance.
Yeah. Now wait, are these limited edition?
They are limited edition signed. Let's say you wanted to sell limited edition signed inkjet prints, pigment inkjet prints, 13 by 19 in editions of like 5 or 10, you could do that on this site. And then you could, you know, these are real good. So then I just get a notice that when somebody buys one, I take the print.
That's gotta be a pain to set up, right?
It's so easy to set up. It's unbelievable. 10 times easier than any other product kind of thing I've ever used. And you could put stuff on sale. So you could say, oh, this is the print of the month. This one is going for 20% off. And you click a little checkbox and say, oh, this is a sale price. And then when it shows up on your thing, it has a little thing saying sale price. And it has the original price slashed out. And it like looks all cool and official. Nice, nice. Clean templates like Squarespace is known to do. Just fantastic. And, you know, and then there's that portfolio app that Nikki likes, right? On the iPad and the iPhone.
Yeah, that, loves it. That pulls. You're always in sync.
Yeah, pulls your images down off of your portfolio on your website and always has high-res ones on your phone or on your iPad. It's just nuts. Fantastic. Squarespace, man, they know how to do it right. But look, if you sign up for you get a free domain name, so they get you that, so you could get, say, wadmaneditions.com. They handle all the hosting. They deal with all this, all the software, and they have 24-hour customer support doing the online chats, which is fantastic. And you talk to somebody and they give you actual answers and they don't say, have you tried restarting your browser?
Right. There's also a pretty comprehensive, like a wiki type thing where you can learn knowledge base where you can, you know, people have had, odds are people have had the issue that you're experiencing if you even have one at all, and you can find an answer.
Right. Yeah. So if you don't have a blog or website yet, go over there to squarespace.com/OTP.
What's it going to cost me to set this thing up?
You could try it for nothing, free.
What?
No credit card necessary for two
weeks.
Come
on, son.
Yeah. Play with it and see what you like. And if you like it, go, you know, buy a year and use our April Squarespace code, which is, wait for it.
Oh, no.
Fancy or old. All one word.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Is it really that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Fancy or old. One word. We'll you like that?
Who approved that? Who gave the green light on that?
I think that was Derek at Squarespace, fan of the show. So, hi, Derek. They love us. They love the show. They love all of you listeners.
Fancy or old.
Yeah. So, Of course, the answer is fancy, right? So go check out Squarespace, squarespace.com/OTP. Use offer code fancy or old, one word, in April, and you will get 10% off when you decide to buy.
That's genius.
Squarespace.com, everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them very much for their support.
Yes, thanks, guys.
And
wow.
It's good stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Okay,
yeah.
So who's our photographer?
I'm not going to get any grief over that at all.
Who's our photographer?
Hey, photographer of the week, another photographer that you have hipped me to that I was aware of some of the photographs but didn't know who it was, Margaret Burke White.
There you go.
An incredible photographer.
Yeah, this woman is not messing around. Like some women mess around.
Oh.
No,
that was Bill. That wasn't me. Send your hate mail to Bill Wadman.
Yeah. So, born in 1904, so she a long time ago, and she lived to 1971. She actually died of Parkinson's disease early when she was 67 years old, and she had had it for like 19 years before she died.
Think of the changes she saw.
Yeah.
Not only in photography, but just changes to the world that she sort of bore witness to. Yeah.
She was there right after the airplane was invented and she saw people land on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was only 67. It's not like she lived to 130.
Right.
But look, she was the first female war correspondent allowed in. She was the first foreign photographer to go take pictures of Soviet industry. She was the first female photographer for Life magazine. Her picture was on the first cover of Life. This woman was a monster.
What picture was it? Do we know what it was?
I don't know. I will look it up and we'll find
it. Yeah. Look, and this, she was one of these photographers who were just photographers. They photographed everything. They had this eye for everything. She photographed war. She photographed architecture. She photographed street. She was everywhere.
Yeah. 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 The cover, it was a cover image of the building of that dam. You know, that famous picture of it's like the pylons of this big giant thing getting built.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was apparently the first Life magazine cover. But this woman was a monster. She was everywhere. She's in World War II. There's pictures of her that she took in Nazi concentration camps, you know, like literally people sleeping on their cots, you know, as a camp just got open, she was there taking those pictures.
Right, right.
She was there. There's that crazy picture that you showed me. Of a guy holding up a guy's head that he had just severed off.
It's like some,
I think that must've been like the Sino-Japanese war, you know, like the Chinese-Japanese war.
Brutal.
Terrible, terrible, terrible stuff.
But then she also does these amazing, like the one that you showed of all the hats in the fashion district.
It was like, oh, another, that's a great shot. Looking 1940s down from the building.
Yeah. And you have like this sea of fedoras, you know, of people walking through the streets.
And I love the idea that there are, she's one of those photographers from that day where you could shoot street stuff and you could shoot serious architectural stuff and you could shoot portraits and people hired you for all that stuff because you were a photographer. You weren't just a portrait photographer or a know, architectural photographer, or they didn't try to pin you in. You know, there's that iconic shot of, Gandhi.
Yeah. Sitting at the loom.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, she shot that one. Apparently, though, she first developed Parkinson's in 1953, and she slowed her career because she had an encroaching paralysis, which is really sad. Went through all kinds of treatments, and the tremors started to affecting her speech, and then she ended up dying at age 67, which is really sad. Apparently, there's an autobiography called Portrait of Myself.
Oh, wow.
Which is a bestseller, which, you know what, well, let me see if I can...
Put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Is it still in print?
I'm going to find out. I'm sure it is.
There's also that crazy shot of her kind of coming out of the gargoyle atop the Chrysler building.
Oh, that's a classic, right?
Yeah. It's a great shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not getting me up there.
No. No, thank you. No, no. Thank you. No, thank you.
No, leave that for Joe McNally.
Yeah. Oh, Joe McNally. Oh, he went up at the top of that.
Yeah, the top of that thing in Dubai.
He's crazy, man. That dude's crazy.
Yeah.
How come Joe McNally's not a fan of the show?
I don't know.
We gotta make that happen.
We gotta reach out to Joe McNally.
You know, I put it in the show notes, the portrait of myself, and I put up links to a bunch of books on Amazon. So if you guys want books of some of the photographers that we talk about, go to the show notes. You can go to 5x5.tv/OTP/49.
Yes.
And that will be the show notes. Or just go to 5x5.tv/OTP and you'll see all the episodes. You can click to the episode page and get the show notes. But if you go, you know, buy a book through there, it gives us a few pennies and, you know, you help support the show. Actually, if you go through there and you buy anything at Amazon, it helps support the show.
Yeah. So go buy a 5D3 or a, you know, something really expensive.
Yeah. But we're gonna put a bunch of links in there, not just for Amazon stuff, but other links to her work and that kind of stuff. And of course, all the rest of the links for the show. Are beautiful work, though.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Work. And, you know, it's the whole black and white thing, man. Sometimes black and white works.
You think?
Yeah.
Are you making that concession?
Yeah. I think it might actually work. All right. So how can people get a hold of us, Jeffrey?
Podcast@ontakingpictures.com. That's one way.
Okay.
There's another way. That's the Google Plus community, which is going very strongly. There's some really fantastic work being shared. Great discussions. Love seeing what you guys are talking about. And again, there is, like we said at the top of the show, there are a few people that are sharing for the very first time on the Google Plus community, which I think is pretty amazing.
Yep.
We're trying to make it a place where it's constructive criticism and commentary, and so far it's working out okay.
Yeah, so if you go over to Google Plus, you search for On Taking Pictures, you'll find the community, or it's bit.ly/capital O capital T capital P capital G group.
Yeah, OTP group, and the OTPG is capitalized.
We'll
Maybe
jump
we should
right
do
there.
Another one. Should we do a lowercase one?
Yeah, it's up to you. You're the fancy pants who does that. I think people could just go over there and search. But the community's there. It's vibrant. And we made Alan Bainward, one of our moderators.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out because there's a new sheriff in town.
That's right. He's got an itchy mouse finger too.
Yeah. So, but it's great. You know, what's great is that like some days I don't get around to get over there and I go over eventually and there's 10, 15 posts by people and there's conversation and there's like, it's like, it's alive without us, which is totally what we
want. That was kind of the goal, right?
Yeah.
Just to create something that people would go and be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're very happy to hear that. Twitter.
Where do you tweet? Yeah. Where do you tweet?
I am at Bill Wadman. You're at Jeffrey Sidoris.
Yes. JeffrySadoris.
Yep. And what else? Anything else?
No. Okay. That's it. Leave a review or a rating, maybe on iTunes.
Go to iTunes
if you want.
And leave a review. You know, I think maybe next week, because this was such a like a heavy show. Maybe we do the workshop episode next week, or the workflow rather.
Workflow episode. Yeah. We missed a hangout last week because you were on.
Yeah, we could try to do one this Friday.
Bill was on assignment.
Yeah.
Let's try and do one on Friday.
Okay.
That was a good time last time, and I'd like to do these more regularly.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. So we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
All